record button. That's never happened. All right, hold tight. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another day in the TeleSummit. It's about how you live, taking the fear out of having conversations about advanced care planning, serious illness, and end-of-life care. And today is really a pretty unique, special day because the person we have with us is D.S. Moss, who lives in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome, D.S.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome to have you. I'm going to read a short little bio about DS so you guys will know who this person is. He is a producer and screenwriter turned podcaster. A natural explorer, he uses satire to examine the absurdity of the human condition. Moss is a member of the Writers Guild of America and has been a resident at the McDowell Colony and IFP Media Lab. He currently lives and works in Brooklyn, and he has come up with a series called The Adventures of Memento Mori, which is an amazing series of podcasts all about dying and death.
I found something on the web for it. It's called The Adventures of Memento Mori, which is an amazing
series. Do you know what that is?
Siri is also on the line.
Yeah, so I'm going to turn Siri off. That's hysterical. Lord D, that's hysterical. All right, so anyway.
Did Siri promote the podcast?
Apparently she's trying to.
Good for her.
Okay, so DS, again, welcome.
Thank you.
It's a real honor to have you. It really is. And so I really love you to, before we get in, I do have one quick question, and then I'd like you to describe a little bit about the adventures of Memento Mori, and that is, what is your background that makes you an authority on the topic of death that enables you to have a show like this?
What is my background? Well, I don't think there's anything in my background that gives me the authority to have a podcast about death, to talk about death. And I think that really is the point of the show, is that it comes from a perspective of me exploring and me just learning about and trying to reconcile my own mortality. So I don't think really anything makes any of us an expert on the topic. If anybody actually, unless they're a Buddhist monk that lives on a mountain for 30 years that says they have it all figured out and know what it all means, I don't think you have too much credibility. You know, it's funny. I was actually with a friend, and she's doing a project sort around death, but it's more in search of business opportunities for a client of hers. And we went to this function of Death Lab at Columbia a couple weeks ago. And as we were like walking, getting back on the train, she's like, you know, I feel uncomfortable because about talking about death because both my parents are still alive. And so there's this idea that somehow you need tragedy or grief or to experience it so intimately that somehow then you don't have, the authority to speak on the subject. And I think that's entirely untrue. I think because ultimately, right, it will happen anyway. So it's inevitable. So I think it's everybody should be talking about it.
Well, what I would love for you to do is describe to the viewers about your series. And I have been so impressed at how you can, some of them are very heartfelt in interviews with people that are dying and in hospice care, and other of the podcasts are just put a fun kind of spin on having these conversations. So I don't want to say too much about it. I'd much rather you describe how this whole thing even was born, came to be, and some of the different episodes and the people that you've met through the process.
Yeah, so I guess my origin story, it isn't really all that dramatic. I was actually trying to impress a girl. She asked, usually how all of the origin stories come. And then she asked if I had a podcast, what would it be on? And I took it seriously, and I'm not really an expert in anything, at least enough to talk about over and over again. And then I was writing a script at the time about this millennial who was going through a quarter-life crisis, and I was making fun of it. But I was knee-deep in all of the existential writers, and so, like, on my board when I work, I have all these stickies. And so the sticky notes say, like, hate and dread and these key phrases of existentialist thought. And then I just realized that everything that I do creatively, or even it just explore out of curiosity, it has to do with this idea of meaning and purpose. Meaning and purpose.
Right. Meaning and purpose.
Yeah. And then so if it just came about, like, everything that I do is about death, really. And so then I was like, if I have a podcast, I would have a podcast on death. And then I was like, I'm going to do a podcast on death. So that's really how it started. And so the premise of the show is just that. It's me exploring the topic through the lens of death, for me to hopefully find a way to live a more meaningful and purposeful and ultimately happy life. So the hypothesis was that if I could reconcile my mortality, like emotionally, like I think we all intellectually know that we're going to die, right? But at least for me personally, there's a disconnect between what I can intellectually grasp and what I emotionally grasp. I wanted to connect with.
That's pretty universal. A lot of people struggle with that.
Yeah, and so I present the struggle on air so everybody else can hopefully live vicariously through me stubbing my toes through this thing called life.
One of my favorites was you and apparently some friends were talking, and somebody said, well, maybe what we should do is everybody guess, like put in a sealed envelope or something, everybody guess what the cause of death will be, and then when it happens, whoever guessed right gets all the estate or something.
Yeah, it'll be a pool. Yeah, it'll be like whoever guesses it right gets everything.
Yeah. And bottom line is, it was a very fun conversation about a really serious topic, which is getting all your stuff in order, you know. And there was another part one and part two, where you were, I guess, interviewing a woman that had interviewed other people that were in hospice care. And that was really, really touching. If you can speak to that one a little bit.
Yeah, so that's episode 6 and 7 called Thoughts in Passing. And I interviewed an artist, a portrait artist. Her name is Claudia Beechin. And her project was to go into hospice care all throughout the San Francisco Bay Area and interview, ultimately, 9 people with 6 months or less to live. And they were just incredible, poignant. There were 3 minutes, kind of life lessons, but it wasn't really, and Claudia talks about this in the show, is that we had a lot in common. I have great affection for her because she was able to articulate thoughts that I had. You know, when you like read a book or you hear someone talk to you, like, that's exactly what I was thinking. You just said it a lot better than I could.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. And so she's that person for me in this topic. And she went into it thinking that she was going to really get the cliff notes, right? She was going to interview, she's in her mid-30s, that she was going to interview these 9 people on their deathbed, and they were going to give her so much insight, then she would be able to, you know, go in turbo mode and live, you know, in a life that she wouldn't have been able to otherwise. And I think the lesson she learned from there was, there are no secrets. And instead of like these people being like wise answer givers, they just become incredibly human. And they're 3-minute conversations. They'll make you laugh. They'll make you cry. They'll remind you of somebody that you know that's passed.
Some of their stories were really tragic, just very heartbreaking.
Yeah, and relatable. You know.
Oh yeah.
I think there's one. I forget her name, but she was a nurse, and she had spent her whole life taking care of other people. And finally, when it became where everybody else that she had taken care of has gone, and it's just her, and she wasn't able to get that in return. And that was sad. And she uses this I don't even know if she meant it as a metaphor, or maybe it's not a metaphor, but it's a beautiful story how when she was a kid, she drew a picture of the horse, and it was a beautiful picture of a horse, but she could just never draw the tail to it.
I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah, and then she tried, but the tail would never be right. And I guess maybe that horse is born without a tail.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't want to give too many of the stories away, because I really want everybody, you really need to listen to these podcasts. But there was one that was really kind of heartbreaking, and that was the gentleman that he was in hospice care. He was very close to death, and he just couldn't come to terms and admit that he was dying.
Oh yeah, he was going to die. Yeah.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He just couldn't accept it, and that was a hard interview to hear. You know.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Well, I won't. They're all interesting. We could probably have a 30-minute conversation about each of these subjects. Yeah, so Claudia Beach, and the project is called Thoughts in Passing.
Yeah.
Google it and have a look. It's great.
So I've got a couple of questions for you, but I did want to ask, so how did you come up with the name for your website, Remember to Die?
Well, of course, Memento Mori is Latin for remember that you will die. And I think remember that you will die was either taking or just too long for.
Okay.
And I get that actually remember to die could be interpreted slightly outside of the context of Memento Mori. It's certainly not a promotion to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the premise is the same. Remember to die with this idea that in doing so, then you will remember to live.
Exactly. That was where I wanted you to go, is that if you... Or again, the whole telesummit is about taking the fear out of having these conversations. And if you talk about what you want, what you don't want, you know, just have all the conversations that are involved with this kind of thing, it just helps bring our awareness a little more to the forefront that, you know, we're not promised tomorrow, and let's make the most of today. You know, let's not wait to write that book or do that podcast or whatever it is you want to do. Why don't you start on it right now? Just go ahead and do it. You know, don't wait. Live your life. So on the outset of the adventure, what did you think you were going to get out of the podcast?
I honestly thought that I would come out the other side more spiritual. Or maybe, and I guess maybe I am, but I thought that I would come out with a more absolute belief system in, I don't even know specifically in what, but whether that be life after death or the meaning of sort of that the kernel or the core of everything, I really thought that I would be more spiritually connected to that. And I guess ultimately, I am, just not in the terms that I thought going into such an endeavor.
So if you were thinking that would happen, so what did happen? Like, how would you describe where you are now as a result of all those conversations and experiences and just thought processes that you went through?
I think, I call it the red pill, right? The Matrix red pill versus the blue pill. The red pill is that you got to live outside the Matrix. And I'm not, by no means, super unhappy that somebody's using that as a metaphor. So something interesting happened probably around, it was the mass extinction. So there's a two-parter on mass extinction. And that one, because I tried to, as I planned, and it's serial somewhat, the show is, so one kind of leads to the next, but
right.
I would try to not put two very serious topics back to back to give it a little bit of breathing room, and so I sincerely thought that the mass extinction episodes were going to be the levity, and then because we're talking about asteroids and dinosaurs and science, right? Science is fun, right? It wasn't fun at all. It was quite scary and stark. And then, then you start really examining your values in the terms of consumption and humanity and potential versus the actual what we do as compared to what we're capable of doing. And it affected me quite deeply and very unexpectedly. And so that was kind of, I think, the launching pad into this, what ultimately became more enlightened, in the sense of, right, two primary things make humans humans, right, is our ability to adapt and control our habitat, and then our ability to create narratives. And through these narratives, we create language and then consciousness and sense of potential future and sort of our sense of past. And then with that is ego. Mm-hmm. All these things are incredibly useful tools, and it's gotten us to where we are today. But it also became very apparent in those episodes and going forward that those have been hijacked in a lot of ways. And I'm not here to talk about the maladies of humanity, but more so of like in my participation in it. So it enabled me to, the silver lining to this was then to just peel back those narratives that are made up. Everything's made up, really. We've created it. Some of it serves us and some of it does not serve us well, and it maybe it served us at one time. So this enabled me to actually put value back into those things that were valuable, in regards to consumerism and in regards to my personal relationships with family and friends. This is where I kind of a little bit worried about treading, because then it starts sounding like a cliche. But again, to just tie back into what we said at the beginning, is that it enabled me to connect the intellectual conception of what things were with the emotional connection to it, and like get it. And again, I'm not profound and super enlightened, and it's really a struggle, because I live in New York and I have a show and I want to promote the show, and I try to leave my ego out of it, but your ego sneaks back into everything. And so I'm much, much more aware of my conditioning and what is healthy and what is not healthy.
And I can tell you from listening to the podcast that there's no way you can listen to all those conversations, some serious, some, you know, light and humorous, and not have some kind of growth from it. You know, I mean, because sharing, you know, we all need each other to learn and grow and expand our understanding. And I just think this whole series is such a creative, wonderful, and in many ways enlightening experience. And you're not going to listen to it and not grow and not have a better understanding of a few different things. I mean, it's really, really extremely well done.
Thank you.
Extremely well done. So, so let me ask you this. In your experience, do you find people have difficulty in talking about death?
Yes and no. So the funny thing happens, and it almost happens every time I tell somebody that I have a podcast on death. I have a podcast on death, and there's like a reaction, there's a lean back, and you just got to wait one Mississippi, two Mississippi, and then there's a lean in, and then they start telling you their story. You just got to give it, I don't even talk, I have a podcast on death, and I just wait for it, and it's this.
Well, yeah, tell them the story about the baby shower you went to.
Oh, so it's a thing now where guys get invited to baby showers. This is my first. I've gone to three so far this year.
Oh my gosh.
The first three. But the first one that I was invited to was an ex-girlfriend. And that was like a whole other like level of thought of like, do I go? Is it awkward? I mean, we're friends, but we're not we weren't like, we didn't remain close friends. And then I wasn't going to go. I decided not to go because that's just weird. And I was telling this to a friend, and she was like, listen, she thinks of you enough to invite you to a very important date for her. Just go. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I'll go. And so I showed up. I'm walking to, like, it's close by. I was walking to the place, and I just kept on saying over my head, don't talk about death, don't talk about death, don't talk about death, don't talk about death. Ring the doorbell. Guy, one of the co-hosts, I didn't know him, opened the door, welcomes me, offers to take my jacket. And I'm like, nope, I'm not staying. So I go, I'm going to say hi, and then I'm going to leave. And then so I go in, say hi, and then I'm introduced to the father, who I hadn't known. The father of the imminent baby, and then his father. So we're standing there, it's indoors, I'm still wearing my long winter jacket. Having a small glass of wine, and then he recognized the father of the child recognized my voice, and he's like, "Oh, you're the guy of the podcast." And
what
I'm like,
"Wonderful compliment! That's awesome."
I know, it's great. And then his dad says, "Oh, really? What's the podcast about?" And I'm like, "Oh." And when I don't really feel like saying death. If I'm feeling squirrely, I even host a show about it. Sometimes I get uncomfortable about talking about it, but because I always talk about it. But I use mortality. I'm like, the podcast is about mortality. And then the father's like, death. I love death. and then we're there at a baby shower, having a long conversation about death.
When you were doing this mantra, walking over there, don't talk about death. And you just walked right into it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really kind of cool. But in general, in all your experiences, and I mean, would you think most are comfortable, very few are comfortable? Like, what's been your experience?
I think people are comfortable, and I think people want to and need an outlet. So I tend to have discovered that, like, the cosmos of death conversation really exists in three worlds. One is the others, which is usually associated with mourning and sadness, mm-hmm. Other people's death,
right?
Which is the most uncomfortable, because we all have our story and we all carry that weight with us. And sometimes you don't want to talk about it. Sometimes you don't need to talk about it. And then there's this whole personal practical information, which is sort of your disposition story,
right?
What conversations lie, and then there's the existential part of it about your own mortality and your own meaning, and that's what people I've seen really yearn to talk about, mm-hmm. And like the disposition stuff. I think in regards to the disposition stuff, there's not a lot of education. Maybe there is a lot of education out there, but people aren't educated, mm-hmm. on the possibilities and the options.
Right.
And I get why they don't want to talk. When someone's 35,
right,
I can see why it's not a on their
your favorite topic, right? Yeah.
But again, now that I'm kind of known as the death guy at parties, I really just stand there and let people talk, because people always, I think, you open the door for them to have the conversation. And I would even say, like, 9.7 times out of 10, they will step in the threshold of that door.
And I also think your just personality, your approach to it, it's not a scary, doomy, gloomy conversation. It can be a very interesting conversation with a lot of different aspects to it and interesting questions. And what do you think about this? And so, again, we're trying to get everybody, even the 35-year-old, you know, that 35-year-old probably has some grandparents that are nearing end of life. I did an in-service at a college where I live. And because people don't like to talk about it, one of the things I will recommend is, you know, you need to describe your perfect last day on the planet when you're happy and healthy and living large. Because in doing that, and it can be pie in the sky, anything you want, in describing your perfect last day, you're going to tell your loved ones things that they probably did not realize were important to you, like playing It's a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong, because that's your favorite song, or whatever the case may be. And one of these college students, you know, everybody starts sharing, you know, well, I want to have a steak dinner and pizza, you know, whatever. Somebody else wanted a blingy gown on and go dancing. And one of the guys said he wanted all his family there and all his family, friends, say goodbye, all that. He said, but right before I die, I want everybody to leave. I want to do that by myself. And this is a college kid.
Yeah.
And so I think no matter what your age, you know, you're, if somebody like you or me or all these viewers that are watching, if you open the door with your family and friends and loved ones, I think, and I've said it 100 times, people are probably tired of hearing me say this, but getting into these conversations, I feel like really deepens your connection and enhances your relationship with these people. And it just takes your relationship to a whole new, wonderful, more intimate place.
Yeah.
You know, it should be embraced. You shouldn't run away from it, because there are wonderful opportunities for connection in those conversations.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So let me see. Now that you finished the show, because this, I guess, was the first series, and was it 12?
There's 14. There's 14 in the first season.
14. Okay. So, at least for the first season, in what ways did it change you, and what do you see maybe hopefully coming in the second season?
Well, we talked about this a little bit earlier. Just being more self-aware. One of the things that I tried very hard to do in the show, and that we accomplished it, was I would never use the word we or you. I would always refer to things about my experience, because I don't want to come across as giving anybody any advice. If you can get something from this show, then that would make me incredibly happy and proud. But my purpose isn't to proselytize or preach to anybody my opinions and experience. Well, it's funny. I think you admitted that you didn't listen to the last two, the finale.
I haven't heard them yet, but I will.
Yeah, which there's a little bit of surprise in it, but I just learned to be more open, and take note of things that just I had put power into that weren't valuable. And these are all like ego based things. You know, we all have dreams and we pursue. And then I think a lot of these, again, for me, I said, I had dreams that I pursued, that were ego based, and admitting that and realizing that, and you know, it's never perfect and it's never clean.
So is there a second series coming?
So we are, maybe. There is some momentum to possibly kind of get into a television show.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Yeah. So we're kind of waiting on that, but I certainly would like to.
Okay. So remind everybody as we're wrapping up how they can find this fabulous podcast series, and just describe who needs to watch this and what might they expect.
So again, the show is called The Adventures of Memento Mori, A Cynic's Guide to Learning to Live by Remembering to Die. You can find it on any of your favorite podcatchers, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever.
Or we'll include the link when we send out this interview.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Or you can go directly to the site and listen to the episodes there and find out more about our incredible guests at www.remembertodie.com. By the way, I just got to say, I'm incredibly proud and honored to have the guests that we did on there. We had some, you described me as a rock star in the world, but thank you, but I don't think so. But I had some really amazing people within this community. That I'm happy to say that most of my, I consider friends now. I would say if you're the ages of 18 to 65 or 18 to 85, this could be a show for you. If you need help instigating conversations with your family, if you just want to laugh at me in my experience, if you want to, it's and often it's quite educational too. So if you just want to learn more about anything from the logistics of your own funeral to we have a seance, I go and I do a past life, I get hypnotized and go back into my past lives. We talk to journalists who have been kidnapped in Iraq and, you know, with this looming thought of being beheaded and what that was like to constantly think that you're 30 seconds away from dying. What that reveals, again, Claudia Beechin's work, which is absolutely amazing. I seriously laugh and cry every time I listen to it, and I've listened to it a lot. Your digital afterlife, which is very important and new.
Yeah.
Like questions like, is it okay to look at someone's laptop after they've passed? These are new situations, and there's no right answer, but these are conversations that are worth having with your friends and family. And then, we end the show with me going to Peru and doing a spiritual ceremony of the ayahuasca vine to dissolve my ego. Whether or not that happened, you're going to have to listen to it and find out.
Well, honestly, to everybody watching, we've had 21 amazing experts on this series, and a lot of them are very serious, difficult conversations. DS has a lot of difficult, serious conversations, but it also has just this amazingly creative thinking outside of the box, things to consider, like maybe you could live to be 150. That's one of them. Just really, really wonderful, entertaining, educational, moving experiences with all these people that he has come across. So I just have to thank you for putting that out in the universe for everybody to enjoy.
It's a pleasure.
And I think a TV series would be fabulous, given that I'm a boomer, so we're the silver tsunami. There would be a lot of us watching.
Yeah,
that's just kind of the demographic of our country. So thank you so much for being a part of this and for all your creative work. And I don't know exactly the path that led you to do this, but I'm sure glad it did. So you're amazing, and you're contributing in a very unique, powerful way. So thank you, really, from the bottom of my heart. It was an amazing experience to watch the podcast, and I will go back and watch those last two for sure.
All right. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, DS.
Bye-bye.